Welcome to WRTI's Classical Stream, made possible by contributions from listeners like you. Learn more at WRTI.org.
The King Singers are a critically acclaimed vocal group known for many, many years. The excellence of their work is legendary, and we have today a guest, Christopher Gabitas, who is baritone and also has done some arranging for the group. Welcome to Crossover, Christopher.
Thank you very much. It's a great pleasure to be talking with you today.
I don't even quite know where to begin, because when I read your biography, it said that you are a lawyer.
That's right. I was.
You was?
I was. When I went to university, I read law, but I was lucky enough to receive a choral scholarship to St. John's College in Cambridge, which meant that although I could spend my days up until about 4 o'clock in the afternoon reading law in the law faculty, from that point I could go and rehearse and sing Evensong in the wonderful chapel every day. So I was really doing two degrees, but one was more practical and one was more theoretical.
So you always loved to sing, though. Obviously you sang since you were a little boy.
That's right. When I was 8, I joined the cathedral choir in Rochester, which is a very old city in the southeast of England. The cathedral was actually founded in the year 604, so we're talking a very long time ago.
My goodness.
I sang there for 5 years and took a few years off when my voice broke, and then, as I say, I went on to become a choral scholar. And in fact, after I went to St. John's, I sang for a year in Christchurch. So I've really been around the houses.
Yes, you have, and you're a baritone.
I am.
And you're also an arranger on the newest album, Swimming Over London.
That was my first arrangement to be recorded. So I was very excited about that. It was a song by Imogen Heap called Hide and Seek. And
yes.
It's become quite popular amongst a cappella fans because on the original, Imogen herself multi-tracks her voice, and it's an obvious one for a cappella groups to do, but lots of our friends were saying, you know, why haven't you done this song? Why don't you give it a go? And I thought, well, I love it. You know, I'll try it. And thankfully, the group accepted it, and we've just recorded it. So that was a great moment for me personally.
First of all, I must admit that initially, I had heard about the King Singers through the years. You know, you have a marvelous reputation. And then the album Paco Bell Vespers came out, and I, you know, was very interested in that and was going to talk to you about that. And then I got this newest one, Swimming Over London, and I said, well, both opposite ends of the pole. I mean, you really were very, very versatile. The Vespers are just glorious.
Thank you. I mean, you really have picked two of the most diverse albums we've done over the years, and yet they were released within 2 months, I think, of each other. And it's
yes.
extraordinary, but that's what makes being in the King Singers so wonderful. There are six of us, as I'm sure many of your listeners will know, and the group's 42 years old, but we've had only 20 members. And I think part of the reason for that slow turnover, which really helps us musically to have that sort of continuous tenure of members, the reason for that is that we do so much variety. So one minute you might be singing Bird or Talis or other Renaissance music from
yes.
around the world
mm-hmm.
in a cathedral in Germany. A couple of days later, you might be in Salt Lake City, you know, performing with the Salt Lake Symphony with microphones to an audience of 3,000, and you might be singing some Paul Simon or something. It's that amount of contrast that it keeps the job so varied and fresh.
Well, it also shows the versatility of the members of the group, because it's not everyone can do that, especially in this newest album, Swimming Over London. You're really doing jazz interpretations of jazz songs, and of course the more modern ones. But what I was taken with again the new Swimming Over London album was the way you were singing in a kind of an American jazzy style, and also the words, the way you were saying them, were certainly not British at all. I mean,
I think it would sound very odd if you had. I mean, we are six British men, and we're very English when we need to be. And I think part of the appeal of the group is its sort of inherent Britishness. But if we were to sing pop music, even music by the Beatles, who of course are a great British band, with a plummy, received pronunciation, Queen's English accent, I think it would sound so odd. And so we have to loosen things up, and we get voice coaching. And when it comes to the poppy side of things, you just have to let go a bit. And even though we have a guy who's in his 50s and two in their 40s, and then I'm in my 30s, and and Tim Wainwright, the newest member at the moment, is in his 20s. We have that huge age range, but we really come together as a unit. And, I'll admit it's not easy for us always to lighten up, but once we do, it's just enormous fun.
Straighten Up and Fly Right is from World War II.
Right.
And I remember I was a very young child, and that was a song that was very, very popular in the 40s. Then there was a group called the Ink Spots. Have you ever heard of them?
I have heard of the name. I don't think I've heard any of their material, but
I
know the name.
They were from, I think they must have started even in the 1930s, and they had this one basso, and the person that sings bass in your, that's Stephen Connolly?
That's right.
He does absolutely things that I don't know what the name of the gentleman was, but it just is so reminiscent of that style of singing. It's just incredible. I wanted to ask you as well, is there any instrumental accompaniment or percussion in the Swimming Over London?
There's a little bit. There are a few of the tracks where we do have backing percussion, and some of that is produced by voice. And
I know.
I have to admit that some of it is actually produced by live musicians. We were very fortunate to work with a fantastic American musician, arranger, conductor, and songwriter by the name of Roger Treese.
Yes.
And over the years, he's worked extensively with groups such as the Manhattan Transfer, and more recently, he put together a whole album for Bobby McFerrin. And he wrote new original songs for us with his own words and his own music. One of those was called The Keeper of the Seasons.
Oh, it's glorious. That was, one that I've just made note of.
And there's another one which actually we've held back because we like it, but we want to use it for an iTunes release. You know, it's important to have these extra formats on offer. And Roger, he wrote the songs very much with a multi-tracked, produced idea in mind. And we recorded the rough edits and sent them across to him in New York. And he put together these real masterpieces, actually. It's tremendously exciting, the process of making an album, because you hear the rough edits and you think, oh, goodness, that's not going to sound the way we'd like it to. And then gradually it sort of you polish it and polish it and polish it, and it all comes together. And it's a lot of work, but it's always a fantastic sense at the end of, you know, that was a journey, but I finally reached a destination.
Well, what you have is a variety, once again, of even the pop tunes. I mean, you have some oldies, and then you've got some new ones, and you've got that wonderful The Voice of the Angel, the Sarah McLachlan one.
McLachlan, yes.
Goodness, that is so beautiful. Many, many. Now, again, I thought of Manhattan Transfer when I heard you sing a certain style, and the Mormon Tabernacle Choir. It's a lot of the things that they did, you know, they kind of, I think, kind of paved the way, in a sense, for choirs to sing more jazzy or pop tunes. I think they did a lot.
That's right. I mean, they've got this fantastic straight tone, and we work with the Mormon Tabernacle Choir a lot. We have a very good relationship with them, and we're proud of that association, which probably culminated in the Christmas PBS special of a couple of years ago when we performed with them on television for about a week. But they've pioneered this idea of, you know, just because you have 360 people, it doesn't mean it doesn't have to sound like one voice. And they sound
incredible
together,
yes.
Which is just wonderful. And you know, I think we have the same ethos that they have, which is just to make music of whatever style. It's all music. And if you approach it in the same way, be it Renaissance, Romantic, Classical, Jazz, or Pop, then, you know, with that excellence in mind, you can get great results.
Now, how does it feel to be singing the bass line all the time? Do you ever want to burst out with a melody?
Interestingly, I don't really. I'm very lucky because I'm the second baritone, so I sit above Stephen. Stephen's the basso profundo.
Yes.
And he quite often doesn't have the words. But the advantage of that, of course, is it's much easier to learn your part because it's quite predictable. You know, there's lots of dominants and subdominants and fifths going on, and you know, it's all very easy for him to learn his part, whereas the rest of us in the middle, who have to learn
the
scrunchy notes. So I mean, I'm very lucky. I get my share of solos. Although, truth be told, my favourite position to be in is to be in the middle of those nice chords. You know, balancing
up and
glorious. Doing the fine tuning, and it's incredibly satisfying. It's difficult, and on a different day, a chord sounds completely different because of the acoustics around you or because of the way that people are singing. But it's that constant variation. It's a living, breathing animal. being in an a cappella group, and that's so wonderful. We're very lucky.
Well, you have difficult intervals, and the intonation is just perfect, but some of them are difficult, and you have a lot of moving lines.
They are difficult, but you have this determination to make it perfect, and we don't rehearse a huge amount, actually. People are often quite surprised that we do a lot of work on our own. We do what we call the note bashing, the learning
yes.
of the parts on our own, because people learn at different paces, different mm-hmm. speeds, and we use different techniques to learn. But when we get together, we do a couple of hours before each concert, and that's about it, and that's really the fine tuning. That's making sure the intervals are perfect and making sure that the tone in our voice is uniform.
Blending, yes, of course.
That's when it gets exciting, because that's when it takes the performance from being acceptable or good to what we hope is something which is stellar.
And then it is stellar. I have to say to you, it's magnificently done. And again, this contrast between these Vespers and not in the technique as much, but the music is so very, very different. And then all of a sudden you are that choir there in the church.
It's fantastic. I mean, the Vespers is an exciting project, not least because it's a world premiere recording. I mean, Dr. Carming, who's the director of the Ensemble Charivari Agréable, really just discovered these pieces recently, or rediscovered them after hundreds of years sitting in the Bodleian Library in Oxford. And to find them and to be part of that recording was a really historical event. You feel part of the development of music and how it changed with composers such as Pachelbel. And that was wonderful. But it's all just great music.
Yes,
and to be able to sing it.
Fantastic.
I mean, we were literally recording the Pachelbel and recording Swimming Over London at the same time.
Really?
So we were going, I mean, not Monday the Pachelbel and Tuesday the Swimming and things like that, but over the same month we were recording both discs, and we brought the same ethos to both, really. And if you can get inside the music and try to tell the story and work out the motivations of the composer and the character of the composition, then you can't really go too far wrong.
It is it's a very different approach. I mean, the Pachelbel, evidently he was rather unique in that he brought certain new devices into the liturgical music. I mean, he was trying some new things as well. Some of these are just stunning. I mean, the opening, the ingressus, I guess it is, the ingressus in C minor. You have several ingressus, so I guess is that the opening or the coming into the church? Is that what that is?
Well, it is. I mean, in traditional terms, it's not really a Vespers. You're not going through the service of Vespers. It's essentially a collection of ingressus variations and Magnificats.
Mm-hmm.
And these, of course, wouldn't have been used liturgically in the same service. You would have used one or perhaps two.
Yes, well, that's what I'm saying, yeah.
But they're the sort of the motets that start off the proceedings.
Oh, they're...
But he used extraordinary techniques, and
yes.
I think the combination of instruments and voices hadn't really been used in that way before. And whilst they're never going to become as well-known as Canon in D, of course.
Well, let's hope not.
No, or his other orchestral works, which are magnificent. I think they're a really important addition to the music library of Baroque music enthusiasts, because they do show a departure. And I think the advantage Pachelbel had was, of course, he was continental, but he traveled through the continent and worked in England. So you can see influences of lots of different European styles in his works, both German and French and Italian, and of course English.
And they're quite exciting, actually. I must
say,
the performances are just terrific.
Yeah,
so here we go, and I'm oohing and aahing over everything and saying that I always knew about the King Singers being terrific. But you also give classes, is that right? I mean, we do,
and part of that's for a purely practical reason, because many of the promoters and the institutions for whom we perform have as part of their remit an educational element. And so it can be quite difficult to obtain the funding and the invitations to perform concerts if you're not prepared to do an educational side to it as well. But we actually don't mind that, because it's actually something we enjoy very much. So we're glad that these two things have happened hand in hand. And in fact, in America, we perform perhaps 30 times a year, and I would say a third of those are at educational establishments where we will spend a morning or an afternoon teaching one of the college or one of the high school groups.
Yes, well, you answered my question, because you give the master classes and workshops.
We do. And in fact, we were in Israel last week for the first time.
Really?
As part of the Israel Festival in Jerusalem, and we taught at the Jerusalem Academy of Music and Dance. And that was a wonderful experience because you get to see how different cultures not only teach music, but their love and the way that the styles that they sing in. And it's just a wonderful, it's a wonderful way of actually meeting local musicians rather than just singing to them and meeting them after a concert.
Yes, and you'll have to do an album based on that experience as well.
We will. I mean, we did an album a few years ago called Sacred Bridges. And this was an album which we did in collaboration with a Turkish-German group called Sarband.
Yes, we have a recording with using them.
You see that? Yes, it's wonderful, and it's a great idea because the Sacred Bridge was using the three monotheistic religions, Islam, Christianity, and Judaism. And we went through these religions, and we sang and performed psalms from each of the three faiths. And it was at a really interesting time in world politics and in religious politics, and we felt it was a very strong project, and we toured it in the US and we toured it around Europe, and it's been very successful. So we've done a bit of Hebrew in our time.
Yes, well, you'll have to do some more, maybe some of the folk songs or even some of the newer things. I want you to answer for me, what does swimming over London mean?
Actually, it's the title of one of the five original songs on the disc.
Yes.
We have an enormous amount of luck in having arrangers both within the group now, Philip Lawson being the most prolific, but also former members. And Bob Chilcott is perhaps the best known and best loved of those. And he's written literally hundreds of arrangements for us over the years. And the most recent was that we commissioned him to write a brand new pop song. And he discovered these words, Swimming Over London. I've forgotten the name of the poet, which is quite embarrassing, but they're wonderful words. They're just about a woman who's dreaming, and in her dream she's swimming over London. She sees various sights and sounds and smells and everyday life. And when we were thinking about the title for the album, we looked through all the song titles, and that one really stood out because we thought, well, people will remember it. It's memorable, it's different, and hopefully we'll get asked about it in interviews.
Now, also, how about the words and understanding all the words? I still have a problem with that, not only in our performers of today, but even in some of your segments. There's a lot going on, so that's always a challenge, isn't it?
There is. I mean, generally speaking, we devote a lot of time to ensuring we know what the texts mean. If we're singing in foreign languages, we have voice coaches for pronunciation, we have translators to make sure that we know what we're talking about, and we literally write the words in. So if we're singing a piece in German, and you were to look at one of our copies, you'd see pencil markings all through, which had translations. Whatever language we're singing in, we always translate. As for conveying the message to the audience, although our diction should be perfect enough to reach even the farthest corners of any concert hall, of course we do prefer it if promoters and audience members have text.
Yeah.
It's an interesting one, that, because it's, until you've heard it a few times, it is quite difficult to work out exactly what it all means, because it's very poetical, and poetry doesn't always come across as easily as prose, does it?
Well, Andromeda, was that a Greek person, or is
Andromeda is a purely fictional name, and again, this is one of the new songs. There's a fantastic Finnish
songwriter, it's a fabulous
Mia
song.
Makarov.
Yeah.
And she's written for wonderful groups, mainly Riaton, who are a fantastic Finnish a cappella group who we've taught over the years and with whom we keep in touch. And she wrote these two songs, Silent Love and Andromeda. So Andromeda means nothing. It's simply the name of the main character.
Yes, well, that's what I'm saying. Andromeda, but there was a film, I think, The Andromeda Strain.
It's a
name. I think it's taken from mythology or something, perhaps.
It sounds Greek, doesn't it?
Doesn't it? And she's Finnish, isn't she?
She is Finnish.
Yeah, yeah. So you're covering all your bases. Well, listen, Chris, it was wonderful to speak with you. I hope that we'll be seeing you. You think you'll be coming to the States around the Philadelphia area?
Well, we come twice a year without fail, and we shall be in the U.S. this coming December. I don't think we have anything planned for Philadelphia itself, but we're hoping to drop into New York. But the best way any of your listeners can discover what we're up to is to go to our website, which is kingsingers.com.
Oh, that's easy enough. Well, thank you. It's been a thrill listening to your music, certainly a thrill listening to you speak, and I wish you the very best of luck, and perhaps we'll meet one day.
I hope so. That's very kind.
Okay.
Lovely to talk to you.
Thank you.